Rhino, he's not even an issue. I don't sweat Rhino.
Are you ready?
Yeah, it's the Rhino. Yes. I just want the paper. Uh-huh. I done came down so clean. I'm shining on the haters. Ain't none better than me. Paint wetter than he. 400
degrees. And out come Rhino.
Rhino. Yes. I just want the paper. Uh-huh. I done came down so clean. I'm shining on the haters. Ain't none better than me. Paint wetter than he. 400 degrees.
Look out. Look out, Rhino. Here comes Rhino.
I just want the paper. Uh-huh. I done came down so clean. I'm shining on the haters. Ain't none better than me. Paint wetter than he. 400 degrees.
Rhino! Rhino! It's Rhino! Hell, it's Rhino!
It's better thrill.
The veteran Rhino came in.
In the grill, for real. This year, I take no.
The veteran Rhino came in.
Welcome back to episode 99 of the Rhino Wrestling Review. I'm your host, Dan Rhino, flying solo this weekend as we bring you some news and notes in the world of pro wrestling. And I'm going to do something a little different this episode. First of all, thanks to our friends at ProWrestling.com for having us and allowing us to do this, bring this shenanigans of a show to you each and every week. Like I said, I'm Dan Rhino, flying solo this week, and we are going to do something very different this week. I'm going to make every attempt not to talk any WWE, Raw, or SmackDown this week. So I'm not going to throw NXT in there, but I'm going to do every attempt not to mention anything that happened on Raw or SmackDown, because I really just felt myself kind of turning a corner this week when I was watching Raw. I was so disinterested in the matches. I was so disinterested in the attempts at storylines. And I'm not even going to mention anything in particular because I don't even want to get into it. I don't even want to give it any more of my time or any of my thoughts, or I don't want to give them any more of the free advertisement here on the show and on ProWrestling.com, at least not this week. It's not something we're going to do every week. I'm not saying that we're never going to talk WWE. We have to talk WWE. When you're talking World of Pro Wrestling, you can't do it without mentioning WWE. One of their shows is on network TV. One of their shows is on major cable every week, and it's kind of been the staple for Monday nights for a couple of decades. But it got to the point this week where I was watching matches that were actually not bad matches, but it had gotten so far to the point where I cared nothing about the characters that were in these matches, that even though it was a quality match, that's just not enough in this day and age in wrestling. And I kind of had a disagreement with one of my co-hosts, Jason Calcibetta, this week, when Jason was saying that it's the storyline that takes a match to another level. And I totally vehemently disagreed with that. I think it is a good match that can take a storyline to another level. Because what was the time that we look back on wrestling most fondly? It was the Attitude Era. It was the Monday Night Wars. And think about some of the garbage matches that we saw during that time. Anything with Stone Cold against Vince McMahon, garbage match. But we look back on it so fondly because of the entertainment value and because of the story that led up to it. Hulk Hogan versus Goldberg, garbage match. But we look back on it so fondly because of the moment on that Monday night in the Georgia Dome. Kane against The Undertaker, those weren't good matches, but we look back on it so fondly because of the story that they told between those two. So I think see things exactly the opposite way of my cohort, Mr. Calcibetta. I see things as I need a good story. I need good character development. I need to have something that's going to make me want to watch these two guys or these two girls have a fake fight. If they're just out there just fake fighting and it's just Cirque du Soleil out there, that's not enough for me. I don't know if is it enough for you? Let me know. RhinoWrestlingReview@gmail.com, at Rhino_wrestling, or at Dan Rhino on Twitter. Please let me know if I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. You cannot just have good matches and expect that to be enough. Look at NXT right now. NXT is having the best matches on TV right now. I will go out on a limb and I will say that NXT is having better matches than AEW, but AEW is the best wrestling show on TV because of the characters, because of the stories that they're telling in these matches in the ring. They're not just going out just having two random guys or two random girls tearing it up in the ring. They're having stories. The matches have stakes to them. There may not even be a definitive winner or loser. We had a time limit draw in AEW this week that we're going to talk about here in a second. But there are definitive stakes. There are definitive outcomes. And there are definitive storylines that are branching off from these matches. If you're just going out there and having good matches like they're doing on NXT, and you have no character development other than little video packages that you're showing in between matches and commercial breaks, and you have no stakes in these matches, you're just throwing two random people out there to have a good match, you are not going to generate as much attention and as much buzz as the competing program, which is AEW. AEW is doing just as much outside of the ring that is intriguing, if not more so, than what they're doing inside of the ring. And what they're doing inside of the ring is pretty darn good. And we're going to break down every match on AEW this week. I'm not going to break down any of the matches that we saw on Raw or SmackDown this week because I just don't think it's worth our time. I really don't think it's worth our time because some of the matches that we saw on Raw this week weren't bad. They were pretty good matches. However, when people are thrown together in matches for crappy reasons, for the only reason being that they bumped into each other backstage or whatever it is, it is just not enough. The only exception to that would be a squash match. You already have somebody in the ring, and the only reason you have these two random people put together is to get over the stronger competitor. Have that person in there for no reason other than to squash the other competitor and get the star over even more so. That's the only reason that you should have just two random people in a match with no backstory, no stakes, nothing on the line. It makes no sense. That's why I'm enjoying what AEW is doing more now because there are stakes to it. There's something on the line with each match. Even if it's not a New Japan pay-per-view where they have 17 titles on the line, so that's the way that they make their matches important. AEW doesn't have that many titles. They have tag team titles that haven't even been crowned yet. They have a world champion. They have a women's champion. That's it. But they have other stakes on the line. They have future shots at titles. They make the records for the competitors known going into and coming out of the match. You'll hear JR talking about that win got so-and-so over 500 now. Now they have a winning record. Now they have some momentum so they can climb into that title picture. You don't get that on WWE. You get crappy cuckold storylines. You get superstars on top that aren't over or that are reacting negatively with the crowd. The crowd, rather, was reacting negatively to them. It's not working. It really isn't. And I think the ratings are speaking for that. So we are not going to talk any specifics about Raw or SmackDown this week. I'm going to spend the whole first segment breaking down AEW Dynamite from this past Wednesday. And then we will answer a couple emails in segment two addressing some Impact Wrestling, which is debuting on Axis TV this week, and a little bit of NXT as well, because there was a match that happened on NXT that main evented the show on Wednesday that I saw some moments in there and some spots in there that I had never seen inside a professional wrestling ring, and I think it definitely bears discussion here on the Rhino Wrestling Review. So let's get into AEW Dynamite from this past Wednesday. Match one, we had the semifinals of the tag team title tournament with Private Party following their upset of the Young Bucks in round one, taking on the Lucha Bros. This one, I think, generated a lot of positive, a lot of negative on Twitter. It was very polarizing match. And I think that this match really encompasses what a lot of pro wrestling has become here in 2019. I think it really shows that there is a section of the audience that is really responds positively to hyper-athleticism, to crazy levels of coordination, to the Cirque du Soleil type performance. And then there is a section of the audience that responds negatively to that because there's not really a story being told in the ring. It's just high spot, high spot, high spot. And I think that's where you got a lot of the negativity from Jim Ross on commentary and a lot of people responding negatively to his negative attitude, to not going for covers, not getting your moves in there snug. And I'm going to talk a lot about that in this match here with my notes that I took during the match. This was one of the few times that I actually have sat down and took notes during the match, kind of like I used to do when I used to cover MMA for 590 The Fan here in St. Louis, which is where I got my start. I started covering MMA and I was doing recaps of the pay-per-views, and I had my notepad and pen, and I was blow by blow covering these MMA fights. And I took a different approach this time with professional wrestling, something I've never done, where I went blow by blow and I was taking notes fervishly as the match was going on. So the notes I had for here were hyper-athletic, crazy level of coordination and athleticism, especially with the double team moves with Private Party and with the Lucha Bros. But to me, it felt like a dress rehearsal of a movie fight or a dress rehearsal for a Broadway play. They were almost, both sides, Private Party and the Lucha Bros, they were almost mimicking the punches and kicks at 25% speed. If you've ever watched like behind the scenes DVD extras of a fight scene where people were, they're not in their actual clothes that they're going to wear on the movie set, they're just in street clothes and kind of slow motion mimicking, I'm going to hit you, I'm going to swing at you this way, you're going to duck, you're going to come back with an uppercut, I'm going to step back a few steps, I don't want to come at you with a roundhouse kick, I'm just going to kick over your head, so you need to make sure that you're ducking down just low enough to where I don't catch you. And when we do it on film, we're going to go full speed, but when we're doing it in practice, we want to make sure we got the choreography down just right, and so we don't hurt each other. And that's what it looked like here. The punches and the kicks were so sloppy. They looked like they were at 25% speed. And the reason they look like that, because those punches and kicks were meaningless. They were just step one of a 15-step sequence. I'm going to punch over your head. You're going to return with a kick that's just going to miss. I'm going to try to kick you. You're going to catch my leg. You're going to hold on to that leg for a good 10 seconds. Then you're going to throw my leg back around, so I'm going to spin in a circle, and then I'm going to pick you up and we're going to hit you with a variation of a Dudley Boys 3D. So it looked cool overall, but it was way too over choreographed. And I think that Dave Meltzer kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Imagine that, Dave Meltzer rubbing me the wrong way. That's something new, right? That's something you don't see every day. It's kind of become the theme of our show. It's one of the things that that's helped us grow here on the Rhino Wrestling Review, brought to you by our friends at ProWrestling.com. Dave Meltzer said it was one of the best tag matches he'd ever seen. There were a lot of his lemmings that kind of came to his support and agreed with him. And then there were a lot of people that were on the side of the fence that I was on, that it was very athletic, and I appreciated the athleticism in there and the fact that these four guys can do some things that very few other people on the planet can do in a pro wrestling ring. But it was way too over choreographed. And like I said, the punches and kicks, that really rubbed me the wrong way, and it really kind of took me out of it. And as far as the winners go, I picked this one wrong. I thought Private Party, off their win over the Young Bucks, were maybe going to kind of be the dark horse and go all the way in the tournament. But I guess they wanted the star power of the Luchas in the finals, because the Lucha Bros go over Private Party. Another thing that I noticed in this match, JR, as we kind of alluded to before, audibly upset with the spot style of the match, not going for pinfalls, not hooking legs. Another thing that I was upset about, and that JR voiced a little bit of this as well, also upset with the refs letting partners double team each other for insane amounts of time. I mean, there was some one time where it felt like the Lucha Bros were teaming one of the members of Private Party. I don't remember which one. Was double teaming one of them. It seemed like they were in the ring for 2 or 3 minutes. And the ref is just like, oh, there's nothing I can do about this. I can't get them out of the ring. That's something they got to get a little under control. I know people say, well, it's referee's discretion, Dan. But there's something they've got to get under control with there. That's getting a little out of hand. JR's getting audibly upset with that. And I am too. And it's probably because JR and I are both old. But it's something that does rub me the wrong way, and I hope that that's something part of AEW's growth, that they can kind of get over that hump a little bit with that and tighten things up a little bit with the refereeing. The other thing that I noticed that I didn't really like was there was a spot where one of the members of Private Party took a kick at one of the Lucha Bros, and I believe it was Pentagon caught the kick, and he held on to it for... it was like 10 or 12 seconds. He held on to his foot. And I think I got the spot right. I don't think it was one of Private Party that held the Lucha Bros, but it might have been. But somebody held somebody's foot for a good 10 or 12 seconds and ended up eating a double team move as a result. Why wouldn't you just let go of the foot? If you see the other partner coming over to come to do a double team move on you, why not just let go of the foot? But they couldn't because it was part of a 15-step choreographed sequence. And if they would have let go of the foot, like most normal people would do in that situation, they would have messed up the spot which followed the spot which followed the spot. So I apologize if I feel like I'm crapping all over the match. I didn't hate the match. I thought it was good for what it was, which was just collection of super athletic wrestlers doing super athletic moves. But there wasn't a story being told in the ring. And I know that's the Jim Cornette Jr. coming out of me. But I appreciate it for what it was. I didn't think it was an amazing match. I definitely didn't think it was one of the best tag matches I had ever seen, but I thought it was good and I thought it was entertaining. Match 2, we had a different style, but I thought better psychology than the first match. We had the other semifinal tag team match in the tournament with the Dark Order taking on SCU. It was not as awe-inspiring or jaw-dropping as the first match, but it was better, air quotes, tag team wrestling overall for me. I still don't get the fascination with the Dark Order. I picked them to win just because of the bye that they had earned, and I thought that why give them a bye if they're not going to go deep into the tournament? But I'm glad they didn't. I'm really glad SCU got the win, and I'm glad that SCU is starting to get wins now, because I thought that SCU was kind of being set up to be the big-name jobbers of the tag team division. And I hate to say it that way, but it looked like SCU was kind of be the gatekeepers of the tag team division. We're kind of be the ones that, hey, they're not going to get a lot of wins, but if you get a win over them, it means something. So I'm glad that's not happening. I'm glad SCU came back and got the win last week, even though Christopher Daniels, who was originally scheduled to compete storyline-wise, got hurt. Gave Scorpio Sky a chance to really kind of break through a little bit there and kind of get himself to the next level. And they get another win. SCU gets another win over the Dark Order here. One thing I did not like about the presentation of this match, I did not like the Inner Circle appearing in the middle of the match. The Inner Circle comes out through the crowd, walks up to a box, a suite at the arena, and I thought it really took the crowd out of the match a little bit, because the crowd was more focused on Jericho and his entourage than they were of what was going on in the ring. And some of the in-ring action was even missed because the camera wanted to cut away and show Jericho and his boys eating popcorn. I just thought that was shitty production. I don't know if that's just inexperience on the production team or if that's really what they wanted to do, is they wanted to get over the fact that the Inner Circle was there and that they were just coming out in the middle of the match, and maybe that's the heels in them trying to draw attention away from the match that was going on in the ring, like we're more important. But I didn't like that at all. It really kind of rubbed me the wrong way and took me out of the match. Match three. In my opinion, the match of the night, and coming from me, it's probably going to be surprising. I know that my buddy Dougie Wrestling, you can follow him and the boys over at STF Underground Podcast on ProWrestling.com or wherever you listen to your podcast online. But I posted, there was a tweet, I think, from Fight TV, what was your favorite match of the night? And I posted that my favorite match was Joey Janela against Kenny Omega. And my buddy Dougie Wrestling posted some surprised emojis, some shocked, jaw-dropping emojis. And I think it's probably been to the fact that I've been so negative on the hardcore, quote-unquote hardcore guys in AEW, the Darby Allins, the Joey Janelas, the Jimmy Havocs. Jimmy Havoc, I guess, is going to be the next one that's going to catch me off guard, and I'm going to start pulling for him, because Darby Allin has really shown me that he can actually wrestle and he can actually tell a story in the ring, and he's not just the gross out hardcore guy who's just out there to show you how much he can hurt himself. He showed me more than that, because I think they've let him show me more than that. Jimmy Havoc has not shown me that yet, other than that he can eat massive amounts of tacks and still come back and win a match. I did not know Joey Janela could wrestle. And I apologize, Mr. Janela, for my ignorance. I did not know that Joey Janela was able to have a wrestling match that would be compelling, that would tell a story, that would be entertaining, without having some kind of hardcore rules. And for a while there, it seemed like AEW was bailing these guys out by saying, oh, Darby Allin, you're going to have a match, but it's going to be a Philadelphia street fight. Oh, Jimmy Havoc, you're going to have a match, but it's going to be no holds barred. Joey Janela, you're going to have a match, but it's going to be unsanctioned, so anything goes. I didn't know Joey Janela could wrestle. And JR sounded like me, talking about Joey not wanting to get pigeonholed as a hardcore wrestler, which was my concern. And the only thing I've seen him do was that hardcore crap. Joey Janela can fucking wrestle. Match had really good pace. Janela looked like he could hang every bit with Kenny Omega. Got a lot of offense in. Omega, to his credit, was stiff without being unsafe, which for me is the perfect happy zone for Kenny Omega coming over from New Japan. Make it look stiff. Make it look tough. Make it look real, which they did not do in the private party against Lucha Bros match to open up the card. Kenny Omega was stiff while still being safe, which made me very happy and made me very entertained. I thought this match was excellent. I thought it told a story. I thought there was a reason for it, given the match that they had last week on AEW Dark. And I thought that Kenny getting a win is good for him. And I thought Joey Janela not getting a win, but being able to show that he can actually wrestle and that he could actually hang with the top guys in the company was just as good as a win would have been for Joey Janela. So Joey Janela, I apologize, sir. I will buy you a drink next time you are in town here in the Gateway City, and you can bring Penelope Ford along too, if it's not too much trouble. Next up, we had a Cody promo in the ring, and pretty much the reason for this promo was to lead to an excellent brawl. And I got to give Jason Calcibetta, my co-host here on the Rhino Wrestling Review, some credit. He said that the brawl reminded him of stuff that he had seen in the Attitude Era. And I thought that was very well said. I thought that was a very good point. Basically, what we had was the Inner Circle interrupting Cody's promo with some air horns. Jericho eventually got a microphone. Jericho taunting Cody, saying that he was not going to come up to the suite because it would be a four-on-one situation. That's when we had some assistants come out for Cody. We had Dustin Rhodes. We had DDP. And then we also had a guy who got pretty much the biggest pop of the night, which was MJF. MJF, guys, he's setting himself up to be the biggest heel in pro wrestling. He's already one of the heels in pro wrestling and has the biggest upside. But MJF, with how his character is right now, he's setting himself up to, when he eventually does turn on Cody, like it's been teased, when it eventually does happen, it is going to be one of the biggest heel turns of the last 20 years. Because MJF, he shits on the fans, but when he comes out to help Cody with cool music, no less, the crowd explodes. He's got the crowd on such a seesaw of emotions. He's just playing us like fiddles. And when he eventually turns on Cody, it's going to be huge business. It's going to be big money. So we had a scene where the foursome, Cody's foursome, goes up to the suite to take on the Inner Circle, and the Inner Circle locks themselves in kind of the sub room up there. And I love the spot with the glass door where MJF hands the scarf to Cody. Cody wraps the scarf around his hand and punches through the glass door. That led to a big brawl in the concourse, led to some great lines from the commentators, like, Jericho took a crutch from someone and they're going to destroy Dippin' Dots. I loved all of it. I thought it was fantastic. One thing that I didn't agree with, that the Inner Circle may have bought tickets, but I'm pretty sure you're not allowed to bring air horns into the arena. So they may have bought tickets, but they obviously didn't go through the same level of security that the rest of us have to go through if they were able to bring air horns in. And if you buy tickets, you can get your hands on a microphone, apparently. The next time I go to an AEW show, I would like to bring in my air horns and also have access to my own microphone. If you please, Mr. Khan, if we can make that happen, I'd really appreciate it. Another thing about MJF that I noticed, I don't know if you guys saw this too, but DDP came out with his diamond cutter sign, MJF with the subtle upside down diamond cutter, vagina hand gesture and a little wink at the camera just to show you guys, hey, I'm on the good guys team, but you know, I still got that rough side to me. Don't get things twisted. It's little things like that that just MJF's just taking us on the seesaw of emotions that I just love. And that when he eventually turns on Cody, he's going to be a main event guy. He's going to be a champion in AEW sooner rather than later, and it's going to be as a heel, and it's going to be big money. Match 4, we had the Best Friends with Orange Cassidy taking on the Young Bucks. We had a perfect kind of an accidental spot, I think, when the Bucks' money came falling down on their entrance. We had a Bucks buck landed right on the camera that was following the Bucks down the ramp. It was perfect. I don't know how they did it, but it was just a very poetic piece of visualism. Is visualism, is that even a word? Jesus Christ, I don't know what's wrong with me. Just a very, it was just perfectly timed the way it worked out. We had Orange Cassidy with some pre-match shenanigans. I would love to know what you guys think of Orange Cassidy. I don't know what I think about Orange Cassidy. I know my co-host Will Lewis loves him. My co-host Jason Calcibetta is unsure about him, and I think I'm in the same boat there. Some of the stuff he does is funny, but is it going to get lame? Is it going to get stale? When are we going to actually see him wrestle? Do you want to see that? Do you want to see him wrestle? If you've seen some of his matches online or live or on YouTube, you know, check him out and see if that's something that you want on AEW each week. The other thing I've really been unsure about are the Bucks working babyface or heel in the company? Does it even matter? Because when they come out, the crowd pops for them huge. And in this match, the crowd cheered at the very beginning. They super kicked, double super kicked to Orange Cassidy before the match even started. The crowd booed them. The Bucks do these cool double team moves. The crowd cheers. They mock the Best Friends hug. The crowd boos. Cody is a babyface, and they've saved him, but they've spit on their opponents like Private Party. They've mocked the Luchas. They disrespect their opponents. But again, does it matter? Does it matter if they're full-fledged babyfaces or full-fledged heels as long as the crowd is responding to them? Another thing I noticed in this match, I am glad Tony Schiavone is on commentary, because if Tony Schiavone, who is of similar age and experience and of creed and background of JR. If JR was, if Tony Schiavone was not there, JR may lose his fucking mind. Because Excalibur's great, but JR sounds like he needs somebody to talk him off the ledge when he's watching AEW wrestling. Tony's having fun, and he occasionally, by proxy, gets JR to have some fun. But JR was complaining about guys not holding the tag ropes. JR is, I know he's getting paid good money. I know he said that he loves wrestling. I know he responds negatively when people say that he's not caring or not trying. I don't think it's that at all. I think he's caring. I think he's trying. I just don't think that he is connecting with the current spot product. And when he sees something that, you know, kind of harkens him back to the good old days of wrestling, he pops for it. He really appreciates it. On the other hand, he also acknowledges that the Bucks are the best tag team on the planet. So I'm really glad Tony Schiavone's there. Otherwise, I don't know what JR would be doing. I know the Bucks didn't want to drop below a 500 record, so it was probably important for them to win this match. But when are the best friends going to win? Are the best friends going to be what I thought SCU was going to be? It's kind of like jobbers to the stars. They're over with the crowd, so if you beat them, it kind of means something, even though they never win. And then after the match, we got the clarification that we are going to get the Bucks versus Santana and Ortiz at the Full Gear pay-per-view. Match 5 was probably the lowest moment of the night for me. However, I understand the theory behind it. We had Britt Baker, the hometown girl, Britsburg, getting the video package, the extended intro. I guess that was the Pittsburgh Steelers mascot dude that came out with him. I don't really know. But we had Britt Baker in a match. More talk about dentistry school than actual calling of the match. They've got to stop that. I know they want to make it part of her gimmick, Dr. Britt Baker, and they want to acknowledge the fact that she did complete dental school while she was wrestling, which is an impressive feat. I wouldn't be able to complete dental school or medical school or anything if that was the only thing I had going on. You know, kudos to her. She's a special kind of person to be able to differentiate her talents like that. But they've got to stop with the dental school thing. They really got to. There's been so many people that are being sarcastic about it online that it's becoming a joke. And you don't want one of your top female talents to become a joke because of that. The match was okay. The crowd, though, really made the match seem like a bigger deal than it was. And I thought that was good for Britt. I thought it was good for the show. The crowd was super into Britt Baker, the hometown girl. And I thought that their reaction to it really made it seem like something special. We had the main event. Jon Moxley taking on Pac or Pac, or whatever you want to call him. I heard both on the call this week. But Justin Roberts with an awesome Moxley intro, and Pac with the sneak attack on Moxley on the ramp before the match even gets started. So Pac starts off dominating very early on, and most of the early part of this match was just Pac going to town on Moxley. I got to give Moxley credit. Great selling by Mox as the match went on. I really like the fact that it really felt like the damage on Moxley and on Pac to an extent too, but especially on Mox, the damage felt like it built up, which it should. You shouldn't be as fresh at minute 20 as you are at minute 1. And Mox even sold the wobbliness on the top rope. And that's great. You shouldn't have the same resiliency. You shouldn't have the same balance after you've been getting your ass kicked for 10 minutes. The spot, the 450 spot of Pac from the apron to the floor on Moxley was insane. The Avalanche Falcon Arrow was insane. I love that we had a lot of close falls. They came often. I loved the TV time remaining announcement during the match, giving the match a sense of urgency. And this match would end up going the full 20 minutes, almost all the way to the end of the show. We had a draw. The crowd is not going to like the draw factor. There was some boos when it went to a 20-minute draw, but the crowd quickly got over it when Moxley DDT'd the ref and kick the shit out of him. So kudos to John Moxley to be able to take a moment which could have been a negative to a very good match, a negative ending to a very good match, and getting the crowd right back into it, right back on your side, and act like it's not your fault. You would keep going if you could. You're the one that's pissed off. I think that's excellent storytelling there, and I think that's an excellent way to get the crowd back into it. I'm okay with the draws. I am totally okay with the draws as long as they're not overused. I thought it was used well with the Cody versus Darby Allin draw. I thought that did something for both characters. I'm okay with this one because we've got two guys that are very close to that title picture. And one guy getting a clean pin over the other, or one guy getting a sneaky pin over the other, I don't know what that really does. Sometimes a draw can be okay, but that is a fine line that could get easily messed up if they overdo it. You can't just always have non-finishes. The crowd is going to turn on you, and they're going to turn on you in a way that you might not be able to come back from. But I'm okay if you use them occasionally and if you're using them the right way. I don't want all my matches on AEW Dynamite to end in draws just because you got two big people over and you don't want one of them to take the loss. I don't want to get into 50-50 booking like WWE does. Oh, we'll give somebody a clean win, but we're going to give the other guy a clean win on the very next show, so nobody's getting over. There's a fine line you have to walk. Right now, they're walking it just fine, but you got to be careful with that. One thing I want to add before we wrap up segment one here, my buddy Jason Calcibetta asked me after AEW Dynamite this week, do you think AEW is giving away too much this early? Because they're giving away matches like Pac and Jon Moxley on free TV as a main event to a Wednesday night show, which could easily headline a pay-per-view. And I think we talked about fine lines a second ago. I think this is a fine line too, because they are still in the honeymoon phase. They, I believe, dipped below 1 million viewers for the first time this week. I could be wrong. I could have got that from a less than reliable source. However, you've got to be careful with giving your fans enough that they want to, that you're must-watch TV every week. And I think they've been doing a good job at that. You don't want to get into a rut like Raw and SmackDown are in, where you feel like you could skip a week or two and still be okay. And I actually got the idea for this show today from my girl Sandra from Inside the Rope. She does podcasts, a couple of podcasts with Kenny McIntosh on Inside the Ropes Network every week. Definitely check her out. I believe she's at Sandra Ruth RW on Twitter. She's a great follow and a really good friend of mine. And she's been on the show before. You guys have heard her before. But she gave me the idea this week to skip Raw, skip SmackDown. She said she was so glad that she didn't have to watch Raw or SmackDown this week for her job. And she said it was very cathartic. It was almost like cleansing your soul. And she said, just do a show and talk about everything else. She said, talk about AEW, talk about NWA, talk about Impact. And that's what we're doing this week. We're not doing any Raw recap. We're not doing any SmackDown recap. We're not doing any Raw or SmackDown pay-per-view previews. But getting back to Jason's point, talking about giving away too much, I think you've got to be careful, because if you give away too much, if you give away, oh, well, we matched Kenny Omega and Joey Janela up this week, so we're going to match Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho up next week. Or we're going to match Kenny Omega and Jon Moxley up next week. You can do those combinations, and you got enough talent on there that you can do different combinations every week. But you've also got to give people a reason to buy these pay-per-views, because you don't have a $9.99 network. Even though Raw and SmackDown have sucked lately, I'm always going to have the WWE Network just because it's only $10 a month, because I do get a pay-per-view out of it every month, a pay-per-view that used to cost me $50 or $60, now only costs me $10. I get all the archives, so I can use that for watch-alongs. If you guys ever want to send us an idea for a watch-along, rhinowrestlingreview@gmail.com. If we use your watch-along, we'll send you a t-shirt. It's really a multiversal tool for a wrestling fan that is only $10 a month. But when you're AEW and you're asking fans to dish out, you know, $40 on a pay-per-view, not every month, but once every couple months, you got to give them something worth their money. And I think that's kind of what's happening to the UFC pay-per-view model right now. They're not giving people fights that are worth their money, or if they are, something is happening on the way to the fight, whether it be injury or a failed drug test or trouble with the law in the case of somebody like John Jones. People feel like they're not getting their money's worth. I think what they can do is you don't have to have these stars on every week. You don't have to have a Kenny Omega match on every week. You can have Kenny doing something else. You can have Kenny in a brawl. You can have Kenny doing something, doing a promo. I know we don't want to get into like lengthy Kenny Omega promos because that's not his forte. But Chris Jericho didn't wrestle this week. He was involved in a brawl, and he was involved in a great brawl. And the fact that he had a ticket turned into a t-shirt, an already best-selling t-shirt. The I Have a Ticket shirt. And he did all that without even lacing up his wrestling boots. So, good on him. I think they've got a good formula right now. I think they're still in the honeymoon phase where they have to keep giving good stuff. They can't have an off night. AEW has not had an off night yet. I thought week four was probably their best week so far. But they cannot have an off night. So you can't just throw some matches out there that don't mean anything. You got to have stars out there. You don't have to have all your stars. You don't have to have all your stars wrestling. But you have to put on a good enough show, an intriguing enough show, that people are going to want to tune in. And that's what I've been doing. I've been watching AEW Live, and I've been recording NXT, because NXT I don't feel like I have to watch right away. I feel like it's just going to be good matches. Sometimes awesome matches, but it's just going to be really good matches, not necessarily something that I have to watch live because I'm worried that's going to get spoiled for me on social media. So, great question by my buddy Jason. He's not here with me this week, but you can follow him on Twitter @BigJ2197. I'm @DanRhino. The show is @Rhino_wrestling, and we are going to take a quick break. Come back with a very short segment two. Couple of your emails. We'll talk some Impact Wrestling and talk some NXT. Stick around. We'll be right back. Final segment here on the Rhino Wrestling Review. Dan Rhino, brought to you by our friends at ProWrestling.com, flying solo this week on episode 99. of the Rhino Wrestling Review. We thank everybody for downloading, listening, and subscribing, whether you're doing it on ProWrestling.com or any podcast platform that you choose to listen on, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, wherever you listen, and give us a 5-star review if you so choose. We really appreciate it. It really helps us up the platform of the show so we can continue to grow and continue to bring you wrestling radio mediocrity like nobody else can. The number one wrestling podcast within walking distance of the Missouri River. If you find another wrestling podcast within walking distance of the Missouri River, please let me know and I will humbly abdicate the throne. But seeing as though I can walk my dogs a mile up, right up to the Missouri River there, and see refrigerators floating right down the beautiful scenic Missouri River here in St. Louis, I think that we are going to keep the number one spot for the time being, at least. Let's hit a couple emails. You can always email us at rhinowrestlingreview@gmail.com. The first one comes from our buddy Mark the Mark. And Mark writes, what are you looking forward to the most as Impact Wrestling makes their debut on Axis TV this Tuesday? Well, I was taking a look at what has been announced. Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net had something that came out about 4 days ago, and I think it was just some of the things that had been advertised for the event. We've got Ken Shamrock addressing his future. I don't really care too much about that. We got Marufuji against Josh Alexander. I think those two guys are going to beat the holy hell out of each other. We've got the newly crowned X Division champion Ace Austin taking on Eddie Edwards. Really don't know what to expect out of that. Eddie Edwards won that Battle Royal at the Bound for Glory pay-per-view to give him an opportunity to go for, I guess, any title he wants. I was really unclear. And even Jason Calcibetta, Mr. Jason Impact himself, couldn't explain to me what the stipulation was to that match. But Eddie Edwards went wire to wire in there, and I guess this is him getting a title shot against the newly crowned Ace Austin. But what I'm really looking forward to is Brian Cage against Sami Callihan in a cage. Brian Cage in a cage against the caged animal Sami Callihan for the Impact World title. I really thought that this was going to be the crowning of Sami Callihan, as long awaited crowning as Impact Wrestling World Champion. Sami Callihan's not a guy that I'm super big on, but I understand his importance in the scheme of things for Impact Wrestling over the last couple of years, and I really thought that he's not really a guy that, despite his wrestling style, he's a guy who's there all the time. He's not a guy that misses long periods of time with injury. He's Mr. Reliable. And I really thought that they were going to put the title on him and let him have a run with OVE covering his back and, you know, being his entourage and kind of upping his heel profile as champ. It helps when you have a stable behind you to help you win matches. I really thought that we were going to see Sami Callihan over Brian Cage at Bound for Glory, and we didn't get it. That's something that has happened a lot with Impact Wrestling over the last 2 or 3 years with me. There was times that I thought that we were going to get EC3 over Bobby Lashley. I was so sure that that's what they were building up to. And then Bobby Lashley would go over. There was times when I thought Moose was going to be the new guy that they were going to run with. They built it up so much, and then we get to the match, and then Moose loses. And the same thing happened with Sami Callihan this past pay-per-view for Impact. Sami Callihan loses to Brian Cage, but we're getting the rematch on Tuesday. So do you think, and this would be weird if this is the case, do you think they had Brian Cage go over because they wanted to save the crowning of Sami Callihan for the first night on Axis TV? They wanted to have that big moment because this is a huge match. This is even bigger, I think, than the match they had at Bound for Glory because it's inside a cage. Do you think that they saved the crowning of Sami Callihan? They didn't do it on the pay-per-view because they wanted to save it for TV. If that is the case, if that ends up happening, is that weird? Is that weird that they would... I mean, that sounds like an old WCW Nitro move. You know, we could have put Goldberg and Hogan on a pay-per-view and got tons and tons of buys, but TV ratings were so important because they were a multimedia company. They weren't a wrestling company. They were owned by Time Warner at the time. I'm thinking that was before the AOL merger when the Hogan Goldberg thing happened in the Georgia Dome. But they hotshotted it to pop a rating on Nitro. It worked. WWE was catching up. I think WWE was even winning some weeks at that point. That popped their rating to the point where they got the short-term satisfaction of the victory over Raw with the big match between Hogan and Goldberg in the Georgia Dome. But then once you have shot that bullet, you can't put it back in the gun. You can't put it back in the chamber. They would rather sacrifice big pay-per-view buys in order to put that moment on TV. And it's not the same thing with Impact here, because you're not really sacrificing pay-per-view buys, because the pay-per-view had already been bought for this match. It's not like Hogan Goldberg was ever even advertised for a pay-per-view. But the fact that they might be saving the moment, they might be saving the pop, they might be saving the pomp and circumstance for television, is that because they know that more eyes are going to be on TV than they're going to be on that pay-per-view? Impact does not do big pay-per-view numbers. They don't do UFC type numbers. They don't do former WWE pay-per-view type numbers. They don't do boxing type numbers. Impact Wrestling does not do big pay-per-view numbers. That's not me shitting on Impact Wrestling. That is just a fact that is out there for anybody to see and for anybody to research and for anybody to confirm. They know that they're going to be on the biggest network that they have been on in quite some time. This is Access TV is the biggest, most prominent cable network that they have been on since Spike TV days. They had quite a downturn in viewership because of the networks they were on, from Destination America to Pop TV to the Pursuit Channel. This is the most exposure that they are going to have had in many years. They know there's going to be more eyes on this product on Access TV than probably pay-per-view buys that they got on Sunday. Are they saving the moment of Sami Callihan to win the match, to win the title against Brian Cage on Tuesday? I guess we'll have to wait and see. It should be very interesting. Now, the Impact Wrestling Tag Team Champions are The North, and this email comes from The North, our buddy Keith up in Halifax, Nova Scotia. And Keith writes, did you see the Finn Balor turn coming? And is this enough to give NXT the juice they need to get back into the Wednesday Night Wars? So, Keith, I did not see the Finn Balor turn coming. I assumed Finn Balor was coming to NXT to go head-to-head with Adam Cole. Maybe Finn Balor was going to build a new Balor Club and be the babyface stable to go against the heel stable of the Undisputed Era. But that is not what happened. If you watch NXT this week, we had a big moment at the end after Roderick Strong was victorious over Keith Lee and Dijakovic in the triple threat match, which was an amazing match, guys. I mean, if you watch one match from NXT this week, it's got to be that one. There were a couple spots in this match. I'm not even going to spoil them to you. You'll see them. When you see them, you will know exactly what I'm talking about. There were two spots in this match that I don't know if I've ever seen in a wrestling match. So go back on the WWE Network, and honestly, that's the only thing that I really recommend from NXT this week. It was just some matches, some good matches. There was some stuff that was cringeworthy, the stuff with Jessamyn Duke and Marina Shafir. I don't know how those two girls, who are very athletic former MMA fighters, haven't got any better in the ring, but they're just fucking awful. And they need to not be in a wrestling ring unless they're just doing a three-woman beatdown on somebody with Shayna Baszler. They don't need to be wrestling anything at any time soon. How are they not getting better down at the Performance Center all that time? And Jason Calzabetta told me, well, it's developmental, Dan. Fuck no, it's not. It's not developmental anymore. They're on a prime network on a prime night in a prime time, and you are the bullet that WWE is using to try to take out the competition in AEW. You're not developmental anymore. You got to put your best foot forward, and those two girls in the ring is not your best foot forward. They're awful right now. But I digress. I'm sorry, that was a Dougie wrestling, anti-woman wrestling style rant. Of course, Doug, I kid, you know I love you. Doug and I kind of chat back and forth during the week, and my main point of giving Doug shit every week is the fact that he hates women's wrestling. And it's just kind of become our little inside joke. Doug is not the leader of the Little Rascals He-Man Woman Haters Club. Trust me, it's just my little side joshing that I do with Doug. I always tell you that STF Underground is a much better show than this, but that's not really saying a whole lot. I mean, they want to aspire for much better than just beating out the Rhino Wrestling Review. That's kind of like, you know, some low-hanging fruit that you're kind of going for there. So aspire for higher things if you want to be better than the Rhino Wrestling Review. But I digress. I got off point here. After the main event, we had the Undisputed Era celebrating in the ring with all the belts. They got the North American title on Roderick Strong. They've got the tag team titles. We've got the world title on Adam Cole, baby. And out comes Tommaso Ciampa, wanting to reunite with his old friend Goldie, which is now around the waist of Adam Cole. Out comes Johnny Gargano. Looks like there may have some friction between him and Ciampa, but it looks like they hate the Undisputed Era more than they would hate each other, so they're on the same page. And then out comes Finn Balor to a big, huge pop from the crowd. It looks like we're going to have a little 4-on-3 action here, and Finn Balor does a Pele kick to the head of Johnny Wrestling. Finn Balor turns flat out heel right there at the end of NXT. The Undisputed Era does a beatdown of Tommaso Ciampa. Finn Balor goes out to the ramp and drops Johnny Wrestling on his fucking head on the ramp. That looked brutal. And Finn Balor and his new ugly hand tattoo are full-blown heel on NXT. Do I think that's going to be enough to get NXT back into the hunt in the Wednesday Night Wars where they've been getting their ass kicked in the ratings? I think it helps, but I don't think it's enough. And it was weird placement because that happened in the overrun. I believe NXT has about an 8 or 9 minute overrun on USA. So a lot of people were probably watching AEW, flipped over to NXT just to watch the overrun, and you got to see the coolest thing that happened on the show, which was the Finn Balor heel turn. So you could have not watched any of NXT, just watched the overrun and got the coolest part of the show. And that's something NXT cannot do. You need to make the rest of your show must watch. You need to let people know that the rest of your show is going to be just as intriguing as that last 8 minutes. Because if it's not, then people are just going to watch that last 8 minutes and feel like they've got the coolest part of the show. They don't need to watch anymore. That's something you got to be really careful. You start programming fans that they only have to watch the last 8 minutes of your show, and the last 8 minutes of your show don't even take away from the competition that you're trying to put out by having this show on in the first place. Because that's, let's be honest, this is the only reason that NXT is on USA, and the NXT is live, and the NXT is on Wednesday nights, is because of AEW. So those NXT wrestlers should be thanking Tony Khan and AEW for even existing, because they would still be stuck on the WWE network with much less eyeballs, much less exposure. But if most of those wrestlers and most of those performers aren't getting their stuff seen because more people are watching AEW, and then people are DVRing NXT, and I know some people that are DVRing NXT and not even watching it, because they know that they don't have to watch it every week in order to follow what's going on. Maybe the Finn Balor heel turn is something that will change that, because that's really the first significant story arc that we're going to be following on NXT from week to week. Maybe that is something that will change. So I don't think it's going to be an overnight change for them in response to our buddy who wrote the email here. But I do believe that it is going to help. And I think it's a start in the right direction for NXT to get back on track and to make that Wednesday night war a little bit more competitive. Again, thanks everybody for downloading, subscribing, and listening. You can listen to us on ProWrestling.com, which we are very grateful for, or any podcast platform. If you like us, give us a 5-star review and help us spread the word. You can connect with us on Facebook or on Twitter at Rhino_Wrestling. I am at Dan Rhino. And next week is going to be a very special episode, our 100th show of the Rhino Wrestling Review. We're hoping to have the entire cast and crew here on board for episode 100 live. And then we were also have already gotten some friends of the show, some past guests, and also just some friends that we've made and friends of friends who have sent us in some special shout outs. So you're going to hear from some superstars. You're going to hear from some big names in the world of pro wrestling next week. You're going to hear from some good friends. You're going to hear from some people that we consider family here on the Rhino Wrestling Review, giving us some shout outs on the show next week. So it's going to be a show that you cannot miss. Please listen next week to our 100th show, a very special episode of the Rhino Wrestling Review, brought to you by our friends at ProWrestling.com. So join us next week, and until then, don't kick out of each other's finishers. See ya.
Hey, it's the R to the Y, N to the O, on a block like a tortoise with a slow, on a block like a baker, because I'm picking up my dough, and when I'm in the booth, like I'm cooking up a